that the administration not only has lied in its explanation about the entry into war, but in fact it lied about the issue of war being its last option rather than its first option. In other words, the implication that the administration obviously made is that war was the only option left, that the only way to contain Iraq, given the threats which intelligence was suggesting were there, that we really had no option. Now, Tenet is confirming what Richard Clark...
This is the Quality News Network. Analysts expect another dark day on Wall Street. The failing subprime market and worldwide credit crisis is battering stocks globally. Thursday, Wall Street stocks posted their biggest one-day decline since February. The Dow closed down 387 points. Hope is dimming at Utah's Crandall Canyon coal mine. This morning, rescuers punched a hole through to the place six miners have been trapped for 4 days. The microphone threaded through the hole was greeted by silence. In Minneapolis, divers have recovered three more bodies from the wreckage of the highway bridge that collapsed last week into the Mississippi River. A U.S. helicopter was brought down in a small Sunni village south of Baghdad today. Two U.S. soldiers were injured. Security remains tight in northern Baghdad for a pilgrimage expected to attract as many as a million Shia. Travel bans and curfews remain in place. 2,000 Iraqi police are on patrol. The U.N. Security Council today will debate a U.S.-sponsored resolution seeking to expand the international organization's role in Iraq. The U.N. will be asked to increase its involvement in attempts to reconcile battling factions within the region. Charges have been dropped against two of eight Marines accused of murdering 24 unarmed men, women, and children in Haditha 2 years ago. Charges were already abandoned against one of the defendants in exchange for his testimony in the case. In Miami, the judge in the terror trial of Jose Padilla and two co-defendants has ruled the jury may not consider whether the men's actions are defensible under Islamic law. Closing arguments in the case begin Monday. Triple-digit temperatures set new records yesterday throughout Georgia and the Carolinas. Forecasters expect the heat wave to continue throughout the South and Midwest until next week. From Ohio through Pennsylvania, tens of thousands are without power today following a storm system that swept through the region. Heavy rains and tornadoes are flooding streets and neighborhoods. At least one person has been killed. In DeKalb, Illinois, nine people were injured yesterday afternoon when a monster truck lost control as it performed stunts as part of an auto parts store promotion. Gold is trading at $670.50 an ounce. You're listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business, next.
What are you doing?
Fertilizing the lawn. Do you want to help?
No, not really. But didn't you just do that last week?
Yeah, I did. I want the lawn to be really lush and green this year.
Dad, what happens when those sprinklers come on?
We give the grass a good long drink.
That water runs off with the fertilizer in it and gets into the bay, where it can harm the fish.
So what should I do?
Use just the minimum recommended amount. The lawn will be just as green, and you'll be saving our ocean.
Taking care of the marine sanctuary is your duty. From Mayos at Monterey High.
Hello, I'm CHP Officer Felix Isararas. Law enforcement officers throughout the state are committed to removing drunk drivers from California roadways before they kill or injure themselves, or worse, an innocent victim. Right now, local law enforcement and the CHP are conducting DUI checkpoints to find drunk drivers and keep California roads safe.
Always designate a sober driver. And if you see a drunk driver on the road, call 911. A message from the Office of Traffic Safety and California Highway Patrol.
The space shuttle Endeavour is expected to reach the International Space Station today. NASA says the vessel and its seven-member crew are in good shape. USA Today reports declines in smoking are directly tied to imposition of higher tobacco taxes. Congress has proposed a tax increase on cigarettes to pay for expanded children's health care. The White House has promised a veto. China's trade surplus jumped 67% in July, the second highest increase ever recorded. Beijing's announcement comes as Congress is increasing its pressure over trade disputes, and a rash of contaminated Chinese goods have flooded U.S. markets. Despite difficulties in the housing industry, consumer confidence in August has risen to a five-month high. Analysts credit a decline in gas prices and an increase in stable employment. Following a stock market plunge Due to U.S. subprime troubles, Japan's central bank today injected nearly $8.5 billion into money markets. Japan was following the lead of the Federal Reserve and European Central Bank, which yesterday pumped billions into the financial system to shore up credit markets. Light sweet crude is trading at $70.52 a barrel. Silver trading at $12.64 an ounce. There's more on our website at qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund.
Live from Chicago, the city with many names, it's the Cup of Joe Radio Show. 2 hours of truth and fury representing the fighting spirit of the American worker. And now, through the miracle of screaming audio, here's the guy your bosses hate, the Windy City's biggest windbag, your host, Joe Vecchio.
Up. It's time once again for the Cup of Joe Radio Show. Once again, we announce the humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man's thinking man, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the numbers to call in are 1-304-658-5434 or toll-free number 1-877-443-2366, 1-877-4. Head on. How is everybody doing today? It's another hot day here in Chicago. And, yeah, TGIF. But, you know, as much as I like to say that, the truth of the matter is for a lot of people, it really doesn't make a damn bit of difference because a lot of people have to work on the weekend. So, oh, I'm sorry. It's 304-658-5453. What the heck did I say? I don't know what I said. I never know what I say. I don't know. I don't know. I was watching the news. I was just looking at the New York Times website just to check because the stock market dropped nearly 400 points yesterday, and it's dropped almost 200 points. Bleensork? Is that a number? Bleensork? I'm sorry. How can Kay talking to me? From the chat room. Bleensork. That's 42 in cat years, isn't it? Bleensork? But anyway, I was looking at the New York Times website today, and according to the website, the stock market has dropped 194 points this morning already, and it's only barely started. But you know, the thing about it is, and here's the scary truth of the whole matter, that it really just doesn't seem to affect me, or affect any of you out there, does it? Stock market goes up, stock market goes down. Do you make any more or less money? No. Because it has nothing to do with reality. The only thing it has to do is with people who make money by moving numbers from one column to another. Listen, I want to go on and talk forever, but we've got someone on the line that I haven't had on for a while, and I want to get her going so that we can have our regular show. It's our good friend Carolyn Kay from MakeThemAccountable.com. Hi, Carol. How are you?
Hi, Joe. I'm well. Could we turn my sound up a little bit?
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, if you want. How is the sound, her sound on your end there, Bob? She's actually fairly loud for me, coming through pretty loud.
That's a little bit hard to hear, but we could go on and converse.
Okay, how are you today?
I'm doing well, thank you. It's a lovely day.
It's a beautiful day, isn't it? Not a cloud.
I know, it's like, as you said just a moment ago, I'm sure a lot of people do. People at the various markets and so on are you know, kind of devastated right now and so on. But, hey, you know, I don't own any stock, so what do I care?
It's still a 13,000-something, so I guess that's still, you know, and I really have no idea what that number means anyway. I mean, everybody went crazy when it went to 10,000.
Well, join the crowd, Joe. Nobody really knows what that means. What it's supposed to mean is the value of all of the stocks in that well, actually, if it's the Dow Jones, it's a representative sample of stocks in the United States. If it's the American Stock Exchange, it's just their stocks. And, you know, some of the other indices besides Dow Jones have their own ways of calculating a representative sample of the market. But what it's supposed to say is this is what if everybody sold every share of stock that they owned, this would be the cash value of all of that. But of course, it's totally unrealistic because once people start selling, the market goes down. So as people start selling, you know, the more you sell, the less you get for the additional shares that you're selling. So honestly, what that number means, I don't know. Nobody knows.
You know, actually, I just every time I see goofy stuff like that happen, I keep thinking of Eddie Murphy and Dan Aykroyd on the floor from the movie Trading Places, where they're, you know, and I don't even understand what's going on in the damn movie, even though they try to explain it. And I just, you know, Dan Aykroyd starts yelling, "Selling!" And everybody goes, "Blah, blah, 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 blah." And the market.
Well, my significant other traded for a long time on one of the smaller exchanges. It was actually owned by the Board of Trade by the time he bought his seat, and he's been, you know, doing trading in various and sundry capacities for a long time, and I still don't understand it. I mean, he comes in and he talks about this did that and that did that and this number up and that number down, and my eyes start to cross and my head swims and I just go uh-huh, because I don't know. I don't get it.
I don't get it either. And like I said, it really, you know, when it went from 10,000 to 13,000, it didn't make a damn bit of difference to my salary. So,
here's the funny thing, you know, when it went to didn't it get to 14,000?
Yeah, it was up
record highs. First of all, that was not in constant dollars that it had a record high. It was in, you know, just reported dollars, which of course is not the same as some of the highs of the 90s, but they had to beat Bill Clinton, you know what I mean? They had to beat him. And the right-wingers all just crowed over that. Oh, see, the highest stock market. Oh, now watch now that it's fallen. It won't be any big deal.
It's falling in part. From what little I understand, it's just falling apart. In part,
these measures only matter when they buttress your case.
Right, right. But what I'm saying is that one of the reasons that it's falling apart is because of the whole housing thing, and they were just giving these ridiculous loans to people who had no right to be getting loans, and now all of that's coming out in trouble. And I
right.
was reading.
Yeah, it would have been okay. It would not have affected the stock market for them to do that. Okay. Except that they started securitizing all those loans. They wrapped them up as securities that they sold
to, companies,
some of these big companies bought, and now just are finally realizing, oh, these loans aren't performing. Some of them, you know, too many of them aren't performing. You know, they build into the price that a certain percentage will go bad, but it's looking like that percentage will be higher and higher.
People whose
income and assets are counted as part of any stock market capability, those people are the ones that are bringing down the markets. And it gets to a kind of a generalized panic when everybody says, oh my God, that means the whole economy is going to fall, it's going to go to hell in a handbasket, and so I got to sit on my hands and not do anything, even if I'm a businessman and I can't spend any money, I can't do anything. So I wish I understood it.
That's just because it all, you know, every time I hear about it, it just goes right over my head. And you know, I'm not a stupid person. I may not be particularly well educated, but I don't think I'm a particularly stupid person. But when it comes to anything like this, I just like go zombie like. I'm like, huh?
Well, I got to tell you, I was forced to take economics when I got my MBA degree, and it was torture. It was absolute torture. You know, you'd have 50 questions on a test that were all like, if this happens to this and that happens to that, all things remaining the same, what happens to, you know? And so you're having to bend your brain thinking, well, if this one goes this way and that one goes, you know, my brain just does not want to work that way. It just does not like it at all. There are some people who are born to do that, I guess, you know, and they become economists.
Still learning a language, you know? You know, like people who can learn a language. There were some people who were just really, really good at languages. They can learn 5, 6, 7, 8 languages. You know, they don't even think twice about it.
Right.
But other people, you know, it's like, huh?
I know.
Going
and they're actually starting to find the parts of the brain that that affect those things. They think they've found the one for language.
Can they find the one that turns people into Republicans and shut it off?
We have to find that one and turn that gene off.
Listen,
but actually, there is definitely there's a genetic component, and then there's also an upbringing component. Just as with all other kinds of behavior, it's with a party affiliation, beliefs about societal standards, and things like that. There's a lot of that. That's
Well, that was what the whole Trading Places movie was about. Is it genetics? There is
the whole what movie?
Trading Places with Eddie Murphy.
Oh, yeah.
That was what that was all about.
Yeah.
They got $1. We bet $1. I wouldn't give you $1 for the entire Republican Party right now. I was going to ask you if you attended the Yearly Coast Convention. I didn't get a chance.
No. Okay. It was walking distance from my house, and I did not go.
Were you just avoiding it, or just didn't have enough money to go, or?
I don't like that crowd, you know. I don't like that self-congratulatory pat themselves on the back. And as a good friend of mine said, they totally missed all these people that are such, you know, fierce bloggers and whatever. They totally missed the Democrats giving away the rest of our civil liberties last weekend. They missed it because they were all patting each other on the back, eating shrimp diavolo like the lobbyists.
Well, you know, they were talking about the Vietnam War and talking in sense about the Iraq War, about how we're winning battles but losing the war. And the truth of the matter is that the blogosphere is winning a few battles, but we're still losing the war overall, you know?
Well, you can't really say in the give and take of who's having influence and so on. You know, it's just like any other understanding of nature or people or anything like that. You know, it's a back and forth kind of thing. And so you can't always say based on one victory or one defeat what the long-term trend is. Okay,
well, obviously the long-term actual trend is and realistically, if you were to really just ask people the question the right way, you'd find that a lot more people in this country are liberal than the so-called professional media would care to admit.
Absolutely, 100% correct.
The truth of the matter is that the media and everything else is controlled by the same corporate people who are controlling the government right now. So it's really, everything is out of whack, out of balance. The country is run by actually a very, very small percentage of people, and we're working to take that back very slowly. But the problem as I see it is that it's such a long uphill climb, and a lot of these people really don't understand the nature of the fight right off the bat.
Well, that may be. I don't know. You and I just keep plugging. You know, we just keep putting one foot in front of the other, and that's what we need to do. But every day I see more signs that even the corporate media are beginning to realize that they're top down. We give you the news. We give you the opinions. Kind of approach just is not working. And that they're realizing more and more that things have to change.
Things have to change seriously. I mean, it's more than just electing Democrats. I mean, when I spoke to John Dean at the convention, you know, he was talking about, well, you know, this is a great chance for Democrats, and I'm thinking, this is not about the Democratic Party. This is not about, ha, our team's on top now. This is about, you know, Jesus Christ saving the country and saving the world, for crying out loud, because you've got lunatics out there. And then they just have a thing with they reported that, what was it, a year or so ago, that Bush was had Lyme disease. and they were listing, you know, actually they were listing some of the symptoms of Lyme disease, and I'm thinking, shit, do I have Lyme disease? You know?
Yeah.
And I'm constantly depressed, and I'm getting achy joints. Maybe I'm just getting old, but maybe I've got Lyme disease. How the heck do I know?
Yeah. You don't have the same kind of medical care he has.
That's true.
And, you can't just walk over to Walter Reed Hospital and say, give me the best there is.
And the way things are going, it's never going to happen. Now, even with all the stuff about sicko and all the people talking about, you know, health care and things like that, we're not going to see any kind of universal health care system for at least 20 or 30 years in this country if we're lucky. If we're lucky, we'll get it in 20 or 30 years. So I'll be
dead. I don't know if it will take that long. You know, one of the things that I keep pointing out to people that I, you know, have any sort of access to is that it doesn't have to be all at once, you know. It really doesn't. I mean, if you were to just give people the opportunity to sign up for a Medicare-like program, call it Medicare, call it whatever you want to, but allow people to sign up for that, whoosh, the insurance industry would be gone. They would have nothing to do with health care anymore because everybody would move over to the Medicare system because it's cheaper. It's hellaciously cheaper.
Yeah,
and they don't turn anybody down and, you know, I mean, all these reasons. So you don't have to necessarily legislate it into happening. You just give the opportunity. And isn't that what the market is all about?
Well, these guys don't believe in a free market. You know that as well as I do. They believe
if it were a free market, we should be able to really choose, don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, like I said, these guys, you know, they're really very much like the old Soviets. You know, they really wanted, they just want to control everything. And you know, they control it through propaganda in the media by owning the stations, and they control it by manipulating people and intimidating people. I was mentioning in the other show about the intimidating bosses, you know, people who work for bosses who were just rude, and the rude, annoying bosses always seem to be the ones that get promotions. Because they really
well, there are
it.
Now statistics to back you up.
Yeah, and there's like something like 50% of people believe they work for an abusive boss or something like that. I forget the exact thing, but you know, and then they were really surprised by that. And of course, all the people taking polls were always well employed and never seemed to have these problems on the job anyway. So I don't, you know, I guess it just goes to show that they live in a different world than we do because we have.
Well, my point on that was, you know, Scott Adams has made a fortune. Describing that world,
right? And even so, the characters in his comic strip, Dilbert, they all make pretty decent money. So he wasn't even talking about people who have to put up with this crap, who make nothing, who are afraid to quit, because you know they know if they quit, then hell, they wind up like me.
Yeah.
So and you know I actually emailed Scott Adams a couple of times, and he has this very He's one of those type of people, Norman Vincent Peale attitude, where if you imagine something and you will it enough, it happens. I see that to a certain extent, but I think it's really kind of unrealistic to just say that, you know, triumph of the will and all that sort of thing.
Well, it's all fine and good for people who have been, you know, had popular success to say that, but it doesn't always happen to everybody. George Bush was a good example to me in 2000 when he used to go around talking about, oh, you know, you just work hard. You'll be, all it takes is hard work. You can be, you know, successful in the United States of America. And the truth was, he was never successful, not ever, not one time, but he never had to worry about where his next million was coming from.
And, you know,
because he had daddy's Rolodex and he had mama's Rolodex and they had all this, you know, influence and power and all of this. So, you know, sure, he can come out and say, yeah, all you'd have to do is work hard. And it's,
well, you know,
it's not true.
Remember when right after 9/11 and they were talking about, yeah, we're going to go after bin Laden and all that stuff. And, you know, I still remember the joke that, you know, we're entrusting the search of Osama bin Laden to a guy who couldn't find oil in Texas.
Yeah, right. And he couldn't find bin Laden either, huh?
and he couldn't find Bin Laden either. And he still can't find Bin Laden. I still love that bumper sticker for a T-shirt that says a picture of Bin Laden on it says, "I'm still free. How about you?" And now we have, you know, we have the president basically has the authority to listen into anything, you know, retroactively. So nothing he did in the past can be considered illegal. Just listen into anything we say or do on the phone, and then just throw somebody in jail without a warrant, without any charge or anything. And, you know, that's perfectly okay. And, you know, and then you've got him firing justices and stuff. And you've got Chris Matthews and some right-wing lunatic on the show talking about Gonzalez didn't do anything illegal. You know, he's perfectly within his rights to fire any attorney he wants, you know, for George W. Bush. They serve at the president's discretion, which is total malarkey. You know?
Well, it is true that federal attorneys serve at least the ones that are appointed, not the civil service ones. The ones that are appointed do serve at the pleasure of the president. However, there has never been a case in past history of a president encouraging or other politicians encouraging those federal attorneys, those U.S. attorneys, to use their position to unduly prosecute the opposition, the political opposition,
right,
and let off their buddies and friends scot-free. That has never, ever, I mean, there may have been little bits of, you know, trying that here and there, but there was never, ever, ever in our history the wholesale selling of the Justice Department as there has been under this administration.
Well, this administration has broken a lot of rules, and you know.
Well, they've done that to the whole government, the whole entire government. They came out with a study that I posted this morning about cocaine use is down or something like that, and of course it's due to the tight supplies and rising, and of course the tight supplies that have to do with the, you know, great stopping at the border and whatever. But the problem with this is, if this is another one of Bush's appointees that's telling us this information, we've already seen that Bush appointees withhold information from the public, change information prepared by scientists and experts and things like that.
Or just outright lie. Yeah.
Yeah, they lie, but in order to make the administration look good, every department of government is now being used as a, or you know, now that it's not so successful anymore, I don't know, but was used to promote Republicans and Republican agenda. Well, rich people, corporatists and their agenda, and to step on common people, almost as though it was a pleasure to step on people, you know.
Well, that's how they don't get there in Germany. You ever notice that people like Ann Coulter and Dick Cheney and people like that, the only time they laugh and the only time they seem to just get a smile on their face is when they're stomping on somebody.
You know,
that's the only time they seem to laugh. So, listen, let's go ahead. Let's go ahead and take our bottom of the hour break. We've got Wins News coming up, so let's go ahead and do that, and then we'll talk for another half hour. I think we'll probably skip the quarter hour break too, because we have such great conversations, Carolyn. So let's go ahead and do the Wins News, and then we'll be back with more of the Cup of Joe Radio Show here on the Head On Radio Network.
This is the Head On Radio Network. You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
China is threatening to liquidate its $1.3 trillion in U.S. Treasury bonds if Congress takes action against China for using currency manipulation for an unfair trade advantage. That would destroy the dollar's value and possibly send the U.S. into recession. Democratic presidential candidates like Hillary Clinton say that the U.S. nonetheless needs to get tougher with China.
We've got to get back to fiscal responsibility in order to undercut the Chinese power over us because of the debt we hold. We also have to deal with their currency manipulation. Let's be tougher on China going forward.
Senator Joe Biden agrees.
This administration, in order to fund a war that shouldn't be being fought and tax cuts that weren't needed for the wealthy, we're now in debt almost $1 trillion, $1 trillion to China.
Senator Barack Obama says it's hard to negotiate with a country that's become America's banker.
And that's something that we're going to have to change.
Congressman Dennis Kucinich says the Bush administration has dug a financial hole to China.
There was a myth when I was growing up in Cleveland that if you dig a hole deep enough, you'll get to China. We're there. And we need to have a president that understands that, a working person's president.
The AFL-CIO leadership is holding off endorsing a Democratic presidential candidate in the primary, even as it redoubles its political mobilizing effort. Jesse Russell reports.
On the last day of their summer meeting, the AFL-CIO Executive Council decided to not endorse a candidate for the 2008 election at this time. The decision came a day after what the AFL considered a successful debate between the seven leading Democratic candidates. The unions under the Federation umbrella are split as to who to support, as many of the candidates are considered appealing. AFL-CIO President John Sweeney told the Workers Independent News that the first priority is to continue mobilization and education efforts.
We're going to double our efforts in mobilizing workers to work on the election campaign, and we will be asking our affiliates for as much as they possibly can afford to fund a major campaign.
Sweeney said that the AFL plans to improve upon the successful mobilization campaign launched during the 2006 congressional election.
But you can rest assured that we will have more people involved in the campaign at the grassroots level than we've ever had.
Jesse Russell has today's economic report.
Wall Street is shaken as the fallout from the subprime market crisis continues. Adding to frustrations is the announcement from a French bank that three funds invested in U.S. subprime mortgages would be frozen, cutting off investor access to money. Additionally, China issued new threats on Tuesday that it may liquidate U.S. Treasury holdings if the United States applies trade pressure in order to force Beijing to reevaluate the yuan. It is estimated that China holds $900 billion in U.S. bonds.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You know, ladies and gentlemen, the problem with the so-called professional media has just as much to do with the news they're not telling you than it does with what they do tell you. If, for example, you were to believe what you see on TV or read in the newspapers, you would think that everything is just fine in New Orleans or along the Mississippi Gulf Coast. That's why unreportednews.net is so important. It's not just keeping us informed of the tragedy that's still unfolding on the Gulf Coast, it's helping to do something about it by helping families who have had their lives and livelihoods destroyed. Not just by a terrible natural disaster, but by the callous indifference of the current administration and their wealthy allies in the news media. UnreportedNews.net is taking the initiative to keep us focused on this tragedy, but they can't do it alone. They need your help. So please go to UnreportedNews.net and give what you can, and let others know what's happening there. Because the only thing worse than an unnecessary death is an unmourned one. UnreportedNews.net, your source for real news.
This is the Head On Radio Network.
Okay, and we're back here on the Cup of Joe Radio Show. Once again, I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man's thinking man, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, numbers to call in. We're halfway through if you want to give a call in. 304-658-5453, 304-658-5453, or 1-877-443-2366. And feel free to join us in the Head On Radio Network chat room. Just go to headonradionetwork.com and click on the chat room link. And we're here today talking with, once again, Carol Kay from MakeThemAccountable.com. Welcome back, Carol.
Thanks.
And I was reading one of the one of the things that you sent to me. Let me see if I can find it. Hang on. we were talking about... Okay. One of the things you sent to me was something that happened at a Pearl Jam concert, and, you know, something that AT&T did. And, you know, I'm with AT&T, unfortunately. It's an evil empire, I know, but right now it's the choice I made, and for the moment I'm sticking with it because, you know, Comcast is pretty much just as evil as far as I'm concerned. So until I get a little more money and can really make a real choice, I'm sticking with this right now. But there was an incident where they were playing Pink Floyd's Another Brick in the Wall, and they changed the lyrics to say something bad about George Bush, and AT&T censored that. So it's a real concern about net neutrality there, isn't it? Because AT&T is saying that we're going to do stuff, but then again, we're not going to do stuff. You know, then again, they turn around and not do. You know what I'm saying? Well, they say that they're going to respect net neutrality, but with this instance, they're showing they're really not planning on doing that, aren't they?
Well, they have apologized for that incident, so who knows? Maybe they learned something from it. I don't know. But there's definite concern that the people who own the pipelines, it would be the same thing as back in the olden days, you know, before Internet, before a lot of these things, it would be the same thing as having AT&T tell you what you could say in a telephone conversation with somebody.
Right.
You know, you can't go around telling people you can say this, you can say that, and because until George Bush destroyed it, we had a constitution.
Right.
By the way, did you see my cartoon today?
Which cartoon?
The cartoon posted on Make Them Accountable.
Actually
George,
not.
George Bush is the urinary executive.
The urinary executive.
Has him peeing on the Constitution.
Well, you know, I get your email every day. So
you get
so
the
I...
media email, but
right.
I'm not sure you get the full email that has the whole day's posting.
Okay, well, if you want to send me the full
today,
email.
The cartoon is by a gentleman named Steve Bradenton, who is just brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
Urinary
executive. Some of his cartoons are so funny you just fall on the floor.
Well, you know, it really does concern me that, you know, these lines have been crossed, and I think about it a lot when, you know, like when I'm riding the train to work and stuff like that, and I'm thinking, can we come back from this? And sometimes I think, well, you know, too many lines have been crossed, but other times I think, you know, we've had it pretty bad in this country sometimes too. I mean, the time of Teddy Roosevelt.
All we have to do is get a Democratic president in the White House, and then all of a sudden, all these things that all these powers that they have given to George Bush will suddenly be, oh, we can't do that. Oh my God, it's anti-constitutional. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. Trust me on this. I've been trying to tell my right wingers, the ones that write to me. I've been trying to tell them that for years. You know, you give Bush, George Bush, all of this, that's going to be available to Hillary Clinton when she becomes president. Of course, then they go, ah, Hillary Clinton, ah.
Yeah, she'll come down with the jackboot thugs and then murder us all in our sleep, take the guns and all of us, and force us to have an abortion. Oh, my God, we can't have that.
Yeah. But it'll be all right for her to be able to take people off the street and throw them in prison without benefit of an attorney or being faced with what they're accused of or being able to show evidence, all those things, you know.
It's perfectly all right for the Bush people to take our tax money and give it to Halliburton and give it to Bechtel and give it to all these big corporations that have more money than they already need. But God forbid we use the federal government to help people who are, you know, struggling with poverty and stuff like that.
Well, see, they get dependent.
Like the defense industry is not dependent. You know, like there isn't
a... you bet they are. You talk about dependent. Yes, they are. And again, if we're talking about, if there's supposed to be free markets in this country, how is that free market?
Well, you know, what happened was, before World War II, the country had a real kind of distaste for going to war. I mean, we got all gung-ho for World War I, but then we came home and it was like, okay, that's enough of that. And there was a real kind of an isolationist thing. And, you know, then Pearl Harbor happened and World War II happened, and all of a sudden all these conservative Republicans who were against U.S. militarism, all of a sudden we're making a fortune in the war business, and that's, you know, and Eisenhower was the first big person to say about the military-industrial complex, and that's exactly what we have. We have an economy that's based upon making war. And they just had a representative in California, a fairly left-leaning Democrat, who was saying, look, I want to defund the war, but that would mean defunding a big defense plant we have in my district, and that would cost a lot of jobs, and I'm simply not going to do that. And that's the reality that a lot of these districts face, because they're living off the government teat that way.
Well, we need to wean everybody from that. And, you know, I'm not saying we need to do it today all in one fell swoop.
We can convert them to different industries, can't we? We can, you know, let's turn our swords into rockets. You know, let's do more space exploration. There's plenty
space
of
exploration. We've got, there's going to be a huge industry once we finally get toward really getting into alternative fuels, really getting into green efforts of various sorts. Really getting into protecting the environment, those kinds of, there's huge industries that are going to be built up over that.
And, you know, but I really don't care if people make a lot of money on that, you know.
Me too.
It's not my business to say people should or shouldn't make money on stuff, but you know, Jesus, when you look at, you know, people just making money from killing other people or
making money from death. Yeah, that's where I draw the line. I say, no, no.
And I remember I was having a discussion in not a chat room, but a message group that I belong to. And the discussion turned to cigarettes. And I'm like, look, you know, as far as I'm concerned, the cigarette companies are all criminals. I mean, they're actively increasing the amount of nicotine in you know, the cigarettes, and they're all like, well, you know, it's their own, people's own fault for starting to smoke. And I said, look, people start smoking at 15, 16 years old, then they get addicted to nicotine, and then the companies go ahead and increase the amount of nicotine. There's got to be a certain point where you say it's no longer their fault, it's the company's fault for doing stuff like that. And we live in a society now that's basically built upon, you know, consumption and you know, not just consumption, but overconsumption, and that means going to war and taking stuff from people. Basically.
Well, it's also built as right-wingism has become dominant. It's a caveat emptor situation where, you know, if you buy something that kills you, too bad.
Yeah, it's your
you
fault.
Know, the next person won't buy it, so.
If you're too old to
So that's the free market working, see?
Sure. If you're too old and too sick to leave New Orleans when a storm club comes, well, you know, that's just God's will. You know?
Well, especially if you're black. It's definitely God's will.
Because, you know, the rich white people were able to get the hell out. And, you know, now there's a big old land grab. And that Republican son of a bitch in Louisiana said that, you know, God, you know, we couldn't redistrict New Orleans, but God did it for us. And like, you want to take that guy and shove him under the storm drain. You want to make
him
work.
Unfortunately, there are a lot of people like him, which was amazing to me to find out. I didn't find out all this stuff until 2000, which is when I became involved in politics for the first time, because, you know, I thought we'd settled all that. I grew up in Louisiana. I lived in New Orleans for 15 years before I moved here to Chicago. I thought we'd settled all that, you know, black people are human beings just like the rest of us. They deserve the same opportunity, the same educational, you know, capabilities that the rest of us have. And that was done. That was over with.
No, we haven't.
Until I started visiting the message boards in the summer of 2000 associated with the Bush versus Gore, it was a complete and utter eye-opener to me.
Well, it exists here in Chicago, too. I mean, what do you think North-South-Side means?
Yeah.
You know? There's still that kind of separatism right there. I mean, it's not as prevalent as it is in the Deep South, but it's still there. It still exists. It exists in New York City. It exists in Los Angeles. It exists in Detroit. It exists in Milwaukee, I'm sure. There's still that kind of separation of race and separation of class.
Yep.
So, yeah, and it's a very difficult thing to overcome because it's really kind of part of human nature when people are trying to scare you into supporting, you know, a politician tries to scare you into supporting them, they'll say, well, you know, that black man's coming over and take your job, that Mexican's coming over to take your job, and that scares people. And it's very simple and very easy, and it works.
Well, I think there's a lot more to it than that. There's a lot of deep stuff going on there. And, you know, I'm not a psychoanalyst, and so I'm not really qualified to dig into those areas. But there's a there's a lot of stuff going on there, having grown up in the South.
My thing is very simple. So, look, you can't stop people from thinking certain stuff, but you can prevent them from acting. You can prevent them from actively discriminating. You can prevent them from, and, you know, and hopefully, you know, and you can teach the kids, because hopefully the message will get out to the kids. And that, you know, the cycle won't be repeating itself, because that's where they learn it from. The kids learn it from their parents.
Well, yeah, and fortunately, I think a lot of that is happening. I think the kids of today have so much ability to learn culture from each other worldwide, basically, right. What with the Internet and everything. But there was a time there when a conversation that I had with someone in college, for example, when I was in at LSU, LSU and Baton Rouge, they had just started integrating the graduate school. So they were, and then they were talking about, this will tell you how old I am, they were talking about integrating all the rest of the schools through high school, grammar school, and so on. And so my good friends and I all said, yay, you know, that's the way it ought to be. And but there was one girl one night, we were sitting around at a table talking about this, and one girl said, well, would you want, she was from Mississippi, by the way, would you want your daughter to marry one? And I said, well, I don't know. You know, I haven't gotten that far. And I said, I hope if I had a daughter and she came home and said something like that, I'd say, look, you know, you're in for a tough time here, you know, but if that's what you want to do, I'll support you. And she said, well, I will instill into my children so that they instill into their children. So, I mean, that's how they perpetuate this stuff.
Oh, sure. You know, and it just goes on and on. And you know, stereotypes are very, you know, it's just like the old the lady in the school in, was it Iowa someplace, where they didn't have a lot of black people in the 60s. She wanted to get the kids to understand what was going on in the civil rights movement, so she separated the kids out, the brown eyes versus the blue eyes. And everybody who had brown eyes, she was just distant all the time, you know, whenever something happened. See, brown eyes, made a mistake, brown eyes. And, of course, the blue eyes were always praised and stuff like that. And very shortly, all of the brown-eyed kids were getting very sullen and, you know, not participating as much, you know. And there's a psychology to it. And,
yeah, I'm glad you reminded me of that. Well, you know, we do have some built-in part of us that that is at least skeptical of the other tribe, and that's probably a defense mechanism. I mean, that's probably evolutionary, okay? That suspicion of the other is a survival thing.
Right, because
okay?
Humans are social animals, and we tend to cling to our little social groups.
But one of the things I read about a year ago was that scientists are now finding that definition of other can be widened extremely, you know,
oh, sure.
So that it can be taken to include all of humanity, taken to the vast extreme, all of the animal kingdom as well. You know, I don't go as far as roaches and spiders and things like that, but.
Would you want your daughter to marry?
I feel some responsibility for the animal kingdom as well as for other human beings.
Well, I feel responsibility for the entire planet. I mean, it is where we live, right? You know, and I think, you know, it's like when people talk about, you know, becoming a vegetarian. It's like, look, you know, some animals are food animals. That's as simple as I can put it. They're there for us to eat, and. You want to talk about, you know, treating them fairly while they're alive, or you know, increasing the or just treating them better and doing things differently, making it more efficient and less bloody and you know, all that stuff. Yeah, I'll talk till the cows come home, quote unquote, so to speak. But don't just sit there and say that we weren't meant to eat this stuff. And plants are just as alive too, just because they don't.
Yeah, right. And there's some indication that they may have primitive nervous systems as well, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. When it comes to eating meat, I love it. I love meat. And, you know, I have had crises of conscience at times. And then I finally have to just say, you know, I didn't set things up this way. You know, if somebody had told, had asked me, you know, how it ought to be, how creation ought to have gone, I wouldn't have chosen this way, but somebody did, so this is the way it is, so not
the
my fault.
The way we are, it's biology, and you know, it's not like animals or angels do. They'll kill each other for food, from, you know, that's what predators do. Where we happen to be scavengers, omnivorous type of
food. Oh, and I can't stand it when they show the... animals eating other animals and stuff like that, catching them, and but that seems to be part of the right wing thing, though. They love to show their children that kind of stuff to say, see, the world is a dog eat dog world. You've got to.
Well,
be
it's, you know, it's a different.
And
somebody pointed that out to me. It was a difference between a group of people who think survival ought to be rough and hard and all that stuff, and a group of people like us who think survival ought to be a lot easier, that we ought to be taken care of as a group instead of just, you know, because, you know, and of course they even lie about their own thing. What do they say? A lion has to know that it's got to be the fastest lion out there, just like all the steers know they got to be the fastest steers. But the truth of the matter is both of them work as groups. Lions,
yes,
are successful hunters because they work as a team. The,
yep,
most success, you know, you want to have a better analogy, look at a cheetah. A cheetah is a lone hunter, but a cheetah, more often than not, when they catch something, a group of hyenas or a group of lions just comes right over and takes it, because there's nothing the cheetah can do about it, because it's only
either
one
that or eats the rest. There's,
right,
a story about lions, for example, where the females are the hunters. I don't know if this is true or not, but females are the hunters, and so when they make a kill, they eat first, and that's so that they can maintain their strength to continue to hunt the next time, you know, but the rest,
right,
of the pride then comes along and eats. And I have to wonder if it wasn't the same in early tribal societies, where if a big animal was killed, which I think was not that frequent, but if a big animal was killed, did the guy that killed it keep it all for himself, like a melon scape or a Rockefeller or somebody? Did he keep it on himself?
If they tried, he would have been jumped on by the other.
Well, not only that, it would have rotted. So every indication that we have is that tribal societies were cooperative. The chiefs were not just the strongest guy. Even in chimpanzee societies, it's not the strongest who is the alpha, the chief. It's the alpha. To become alpha, the animal has to build a coalition of supporters, and get, even females, the high ranking females, have to agree.
Well,
I mean,
it's just
so many of these things that the right wing preaches are not true. They're just not true.
Well,
they're not true about animals. They're not true about us.
Well, what else is, you know, let's talk about the, you know, homosexuality is not natural. And then you see, you know, pictures of male lions screwing each other. Then they say, well, do you want to be like animals? It's like, look, you keep changing stuff around just to suit your argument, you know, and you can't be doing that all the time.
In some cases, they want us to be like animals. In other cases, they don't want us to be like animals. And I say, let's look at the animal kingdom, see what we see, see what kinds of behaviors of, you know, look like they might be adaptive for us, might help us, and go with those. And then the ones that we think wouldn't be good for us, don't go with those.
Hmm.
We can pick and choose.
I just think, you know, it's really not necessary for us to do damn near anything that we're doing right now when it comes to war and when it comes to production. John Lennon said it right. There's not a food shortage problem in the world. There's a food distribution problem.
Yep.
And those are the things that we have to solve, and those are the things that we have to work together to solve. And realistically, it's the leaders that get people to go to war. And what was it that Hermann Göring said? Nobody wants to go to war, but it's up to the government to go ahead and make them to do that. All you have to do is say you're being attacked and denounce the pacifists as traitors. And it works in any country, and it's working right now in this country.
Yep.
It doesn't really matter. So, it's a constant evolution in human society. And Bill Clinton talks about it. He says, you know, we're slowly moving from an interdependent society to an integrated society. And what we're seeing now with right America is, you know, maybe it's the final backlash. Who knows? There's a final attempt for them to put their control over the human race, but they might find that they're going to fail in that. And there will always be some people, well, you know, George Bush had the right idea. He just did it the wrong way. They say the same thing about Hitler. Had the right idea, just did it the wrong way. You know, like what was the right way of killing all the Jews? They should have just sent all to Russia, you know. And it wasn't
but they
just,
made the trains run on time.
They made the trains run on time, exactly. Well, they said that more. You know, the Germans are always kind of known for that anyway. They said that more about Mussolini.
No, that really was more indicative of the success of Mussolini, because in Southern Europe, the trains don't run on time.
Oh, tell me about it. I lived in...
Even
I lived
today.
Yeah. You think the CTA is bad. Oh, my goodness. You have, and, you know, the Italians will have these little 15, 20-minute strikes. They'll go on strike for like a half an hour. You know, and they just do that for, I don't even know what the hell the reasons were. They just do it. Oh, yeah, well, we'll just go on strike.
I was on a train platform in a small town in Switzerland in, must have been 1971, yeah. And the train was like half a second late, and people were walking around, stomping their feet, looking, where the heck is that? You know, that just doesn't happen in Switzerland.
Right. They run it like clockwork. No, they make good clocks there. And there was an old joke I heard, and I wish I could remember exactly, but it was like, in heaven, the Germans run the trains, and the British are the police, and the French are the chefs, and the Italians are the lovers. And in hell, the Germans run the police, the Italians run the trains, and the British are the chefs, you know?
Yeah.
It kind of works like that. Where do the Americans fit in all that? Oh, you know, Americans are good at certain things. I mean, the British are, like, you know, great for some things, but they're lousy on food. You know, if you ever go into Britain, I've never been there, but I know, like, Avedon Carroll and other people, like, the food here sucks. Get your sucks. Nothing good here to eat. But you go to France.
Yeah, it's not,
you know,
it's not great.
It's not great, but in France, the food is wonderful. In Italy, the food is wonderful. Oh, my God, the restaurants I went to in Naples, even the little trattoria right down the street, oh, my God, it's to die for. It's to die for. It's like butter.
Yeah.
Like butter.
Yeah, New Orleans was like that, too.
Yeah.
You couldn't go more than four blocks in any direction, no matter where you were in town, without finding a good little restaurant, reasonable prices, really good food.
Well, you know, the French Quarter was pretty much untouched. Of course, that's the area where all the, you know, the dirty homosexuals all lived in there, but that was one place that was untouched. So I wonder who God is really mad at.
Oh! Well, that's because the French Quarter was the highest point. That's why it was the original settlement.
Why should that matter to God? God's all powerful. Anything, you understand? He should have wiped that part out and then let all the water cleanse the whole city. That's what I'm saying. You see where I'm going at? As you know, we only us people down here are living and digging the dirt and all of that. Oh, only we know God. You know, we're the only ones who are really religious. Oh, New Yorkers, all you people from Chicago, you don't know nothing about God. We know about God because we farm the earth. Okay. I'll accept that. Go away.
Well, you know, I, how shall I say it, skeptical of people who claim certainty in any area.
The only thing I claim to know for sure is that I don't know for sure, and that's my take on it. Listen, I hate to do this because we're having such a great conversation, but it's time for the show to end.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it always goes too quickly, doesn't it? You know,
Yes, it does.
When things change around here, when my hours get a little bit more stable, hopefully I'll go back to having a 2 or 3 hour show, and then, you know, we'll have a little more time to talk. In the meantime, thank you, Carol Kay from MakeThemAccountable.com.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, anytime you want to come on, you're welcome to be on. Okay, the Cup of Joe Radio Show has been a production of the Head On Radio Network. Our good friend Bob Kincaid running the show out of the studios in West Virginia. If you missed the show, if you're just listening now and you missed it, you can always listen to the archives. Our good friend Benj Birch hosting our archives on the White Rose Society, whiterosesociety.org. The Cup of Joe Radio Show has been sponsored by UnreportedNews.net. UnreportedNews.net, your source for real news. And by the way, our good friend Ray Hinckley, who was on the show the other day, has some good pictures up. If you go to unreportednews.net/REY, you can see the pictures of his trip through New Orleans and see how bad things really are there. America Back on Track with Tony Seaton follows on all of your head-on radio network stations until Monday. You all have a good weekend, and hey, 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 get back to work.
The creamer of steam, how many more does that leave? Give me a pot of scotch, heat up a pan of Stan, throw in a handful of dick, that'll do. Every trick to the carafe of mash upon a tray of ray, I'll lick a spoon of shawl. Do I need to go on? I want a cup of joe.
Interaction between different cultures and really get to know each other without making any judgments.
Trabajando juntos podemos lograr la gran diferencia en la comunidad. That it means by working together we can make a big difference in our community.
To find out how you can make a difference, visit helpmakeadifference.com. This message is brought to you by the Government of Alberta and Global Television.
Join the conversation. Call Dr. Bill now at 877-443-2366. Now, Dr. Bill O'Brien.
We're back at 51 minutes to the hour of 4, and we've got 7 or 8 minutes left in today's program. Our call-in line number, again, is toll-free, 877-443-2366. That's 877-443-2366. We were talking about the book, Robert Dalek book on Nixon and Kissinger, Partners in Power, which from everything I've heard, and I heard a full hour interview on it, from what I've heard and what I'm reading in terms of excerpts and what I hope to see in the excerpts printed at Vanity Fair, I think this is one that I need to read, if for no other reason because of the perspective that it gives us. Not only on the Vietnam situation vis-a-vis the Iraq situation, which we're in now, and of course the thread that connects these two is Henry Kissinger. I think that's phenomenal in many cases. And I have here a couple of quotes of Kissinger recently about the war in Iraq, and he's asked about the situation in Iraq, and let me read you just a couple of quick quotes. He says, "A military victory in the sense of total victory over the whole territory imposed on the entire population is not possible," Kissinger told the Associated Press in Tokyo. "The faceless, ubiquitous nature of Iraq's insurgency, as well as the religious divide between Shiite and Sunni rivals, makes negotiating peace